In 1934, we had finally reached the point where we could test fly two small liquid fuel rockets with about 660 pounds of thrust each and 16 seconds burning time. And these two rockets both flew very successfully. They were launched shortly before Christmas 1934 on the island of Borkum in the North Sea.
Was that 34?
It was 34. That's 34. Right.
34?
Yes, 34.
But this is the time that was called the A2.
The A2, that's right.
The A1 was a Kiwi. It never got off the ground, but wasn't supposed to.
Yes. We call these two birds Max and Moritz.
In America, the Katzenjammer kids.
Yes.
And they were the first successful flight, and this was in 34. And then...
Well, as a result of that, I got a little more money, because now it looked like we had made our point. And by 1937, my little experimental station in Kummersdorf had developed into a group of about 80 people. We had three captive test stands at our disposal. Our next ambitious program was the so-called A3. That was a completely gyroscopically controlled rocket with jet vanes. We test flew these first A3s in 1937, whereas the power plant was completely successful and the rocket behaved all right structurally too. The steering mechanism proved to be a complete failure.
Yes, and then that was the A3, which behaved as a rocket but did not behave as a missile.
That's probably a pretty good way of putting it. Well, what happened at that time was that the German Air Force became interested in rocket propulsion, and they looked around and found that we were probably the most advanced group in liquid rocket propulsion. And so the incredible thing happened that the Air Force asked the Army whether they could develop a rocket power plant for airplanes. Now, in the Germany of 1937, this is just as incredible as it would happen in this country today. But it did happen, and we developed this power plant, and it was a spectacular success. In 1937... an airplane was flown with this 1,000 kilogram or 2,200 pound thrust in the vicinity of Berlin. We also developed for the Air Force, as a result of this work, some J-2 rocket assistant takeoff units for heavy bombing aircraft. The most important aspect of this whole thing is that the Air Force got so hot about rocket development that they said we would like to put this on a larger basis.
Yeah.
And to my very great surprise, one day they said, why don't you move out of Kummersdorf? We give you 5 million marks to build a bigger facility somewhere else because we know you are too crowded here. This was an entirely different ballpark.
That Air Force engine for this airplane was still made in Kummersdorf.
That's right.
It was still a Kummersdorf product. Yes. Now, Werner, you know I wasn't there anymore. I left in 1935, so to me this is all second-hand information, but I got it from first-class sources, like you, for example. So sometimes I have the feeling that I should remember this myself, but of course I can't. I didn't see it.
Yes, the Air Force's interest actually in our work in Kummersdorf broke in late 1935 already. And this development of the airplane power plant, the first airplane rocket power plant, was conducted in 1936 in Kummersdorf.
So then all of a sudden they waved 5 million marks in the air and said,
"Yes,
find yourself a bit bigger place."
Yeah, now... when I heard that, I got quite alarmed myself, and I immediately went to my boss in the Army and told him that the Air Force wanted to put up 5 million marks. And I was greatly surprised when this man, General Becker, said, "Well, I'm not going to let the Air Force run away with this business. I'm going to be the majority stockholder in this enterprise," and he offered me $6 million on top of the Air Force's $5 million.
So he got in with $6 million additional?
Yes, as a result we got $11 million.
Well,
that is how Kummersdorf got, how Peenemünde got started.
Yes, I remember that you went around looking for a place first, and then you had something on the island of Rügen in mind, but this couldn't be had anymore.
Yes, that had been assigned to some other organization in the meantime, so we finally landed in Peenemünde, but I think it was a better choice, looking back.
Well, I had that feeling, too, you know, after hearing the story that you originally wanted Rügen, which I admit has a nicer landscape, you know, with these
it was very lovely there.
Tall white chalk cliffs, yeah. Looks very beautiful. Yeah. But on flat Peenemünde, you were probably better off.
I had more growth potential.
Yes.
Particularly when I came to building a big airfield and so forth, and all these things paid off quite handsomely later on.
Yeah. So this was, now we are in 1937 with our story.
And in the spring of 37, we moved into the new facilities of Peenemünde.
Now, the A3 had been
fired.
The A3
got into the test firing phase in the summer of 37. So we brought it over from Kummersdorf. It was essentially completed there, but by early summer 37, we started test firing it on the Greifswalder.
The finishing touches came in Peenemünde, and then...
Yes, that's right.
Then the firing from the Greifswalder Oi. There's an interesting little sidelight here, which we might as well tell. Several years earlier, one of the first president of the Society for Space Travel had tried to fire a small rocket, all of 5.5 feet tall, from the Greifswalder Oi, which is an island. And permission had been sternly denied because there was a lighthouse on this island and this might be damaged. You can see that when the army comes and wants to fire something, lighthouses all of a sudden become fireproof and there's no problem anymore. But
yes,
go on.
But I think the failure of the guidance system in the A3 proved very clearly that the lighthouse was still endangered.
However, nothing happened to it.
No,
I
nothing happened to it. But the A3 still was quite a setback for us in the guidance and control area.
Yeah.
Now, in the meantime, we had already a new design on paper, which was to be something big. The exact specifications hadn't been spelled out yet, but it was supposed to be something at least 10 times as large and heavy as the A3, and we had called that A4. The A4 nomenclature later on got stuck to what became the V2. So as a result of all this, and the improved A3 that finally emerged from the original failures of the A3 got the name A5 because we felt the reputation of the name A3 was so down
to the
rock
well
bottom that we had to rechristen it somehow.
Call it something else to make it look better.
Yes. So we called it A5, and the A5 was essentially an improved A3 with the guidance system perfected on static test stands and on electronic simulators and so forth. And this A5 was test flown at first without a control system in 38 and with a complete guidance and control system in the spring of 39. And that proved to be a complete success.
Yes, and the guidance system then was essentially the one that went into the A4?
That was later on used in the A4 with some modifications.
Yeah.
You see, the A5 had only a range of approximately 16 miles or could reach a vertical altitude of approximately 10 miles, so it wasn't exactly a long-range ballistic missile, but the guidance system still had all the main features that the A4 or V2 guidance system had later on.
Embodied all the principles which
That's
were
right.
then used.
Yes.
Now, that was...
summer 39, the test program of the A5 wound up with a complete success. Now, then, as you will remember, in the September, on the 1st of September 39, Hitler invaded Poland, and then the war broke out. And that put the whole endeavor at Peenemünde on a very different footing. The army told us in very clear terms that either we had to produce something of promise as a weapon in the very near future or we might as well go out of business. And so we took a look at our old design studies on what we had called the A4 and asked for exact weapon specifications. And it might interest you that the weapon specification for what became the V-2 were simply developed as follows. We said we better stick to the aerodynamic configuration of the A-5 in order to save new wind tunnel studies and so forth. And so what was the biggest A-5 configuration that could be shipped through a railroad tunnel?
Yes, I know that. Sometimes thing hinges on things like the curve of a railroad,
yes.
What length you can transport, or
yes.
What tunnels have to be gone through.
So the Army asked us how far could such a thing fly and how much payload could it carry. And we said a configuration, an enlarged configuration of the A-5 could carry 1 metric ton of payload over 275 kilometers range, which is about 200 miles. And on this basis, the Army endorsed the specification that how the V-2 got rolling.
Yes, and you had the first successful test shot on, was this 43, October?
No, 42.
42.
Throughout 1940 and 41, the components of the V-2 were developed and captive tests were carried out with and without controls. For example, we had the whole V-2 mounted in gimbal rings on a test stand and tested the controls with jet vanes and everything on the captive test stand. And in June 1942, we made the first free flight test, which was a failure. The second was also a failure, or at least a part failure. It reached supersonic speed and then broke up. And the third one, on the 3rd of October 1942, finally was a full success and traveled over, I think, 120 miles or so. It still wasn't full range yet because it had heavier tanks and a heavier structure, but otherwise it was a full success.
Otherwise it was a full success. So this was late in 42.
October 42, yes.
Yes, I know, October 3rd, 42. I remember this because later on when I read about this, I said he could have shot this one day earlier for my birthday. But then after all, the Russians were 2 days over the first artificial satellite, still one day later. At that time, approximately, the V-1 must have come in as a competitor, didn't it?
Not yet.
Not yet.
The V-1 had a somewhat interesting story. The V-1 started out as a propulsion project only, originally. That was this resonant ramjet.
Yes, the pulse jet.
The pulse jet, as it was called. And very early in the game, the support of this power plant development was actually a joint effort between the Air Force and my own department in the German Ordnance Corps. So I actually furnished some money for that development.
I see.
And it was only in 1942 or 41 or thereabouts where a policy meeting took place between the German Air Force and the German Army about which what service should do what kind of development in the missile field.
Yes.
In the meantime, it had become evident that this pulse jet was a logical power plant for an air-breather-type winged missile. It was not so attractive for aircraft as had originally been thought.
Mm. Yeah.
And the agreement that was finally reached simply provided that the Air Force would handle winged vehicles that travel through the atmosphere, and the Army would develop ballistic missiles having no wings and flying ballistic trajectories.
Yeah.
And so the Air Force, that had a design on ballistic missiles too for a while, gave up their ballistic missile project, and we gave up the pulse jet development and turned that over to the Air Force. Well, after the power plant was in workable shape for the V-1, the Air Force looked for an airframe contractor and brought the Fieseler Company in. And they built the airframe, and that's how the V-1 was born.
Yes, what I am aiming at here is very simply the fact that at one time then, after both existed, the question came up which one should now be used or which one should be produced.
Yes, there was an evaluation firing at Peenemünde. The V-1s were also test-fired over our same range at Peenemünde because we had all the instrumentation in there. And the V1, having been a contractor's development, didn't have any separate range facilities, so they were brought to Peenemünde and fired from the northern tip of the island over the same range. And I remember very well that there was an evaluation committee there, and there were V1s in the air and V2s in the air, and the committee simply didn't know what to do at the end.
After they had been sufficiently deafened by rocket motors and pulse jets,
yes,
they decided that both should be produced.
They finally decided to continue with both because it wasn't quite clear yet whether there would be any unforeseen snags by putting these missiles into production. We also were unable, that goes for both of them, to demonstrate the target accuracy of the two systems, and so there was probably no other choice but just to continue both of them in order to make sure that at least one of them would work.
Keep going and hope that both will, but be reasonably sure that one might.
Yes, that was about it.
And well, then, of course, the V2 group ran into unforeseen problems with the break-up before striking the target.
Yes, what happened was that up to the first successful flight of the V2, we really never had any high-level support for the V2 program because the thought was widespread, and Hitler himself felt that way about it, that this would be impossible to build a thing like the V2, and so we really didn't get full support. Now, after we demonstrated that the thing did work, the official position from upstairs changed 180 degrees, and all of a sudden we were directed to go into mass production, for which we were not ready either.
Yeah.
Because there were many, many problems still to be solved, but this created an entirely new set of difficulties. Mm. And the V2 then was put into mass production, immature as it was, and when we finally made evaluation tests with the field troops who were to fire it and employ it operationally, we found out to our great disappointment that about 70% of these V2s disintegrated before they hit the ground. We hadn't discovered that Peenemünde because we had always impacted on water.
I was just going to say, they may have done this earlier too, but you always were shooting out roughly parallel to the coastline, and
yes,
the impact was in water, and nobody around to watch it.
We saw a green spot there, and were always delighted when it was close to the target, but there was no evidence available about any premature breakups.
Yeah.
And only when the operational testing, which was combined with field training of the operational firing units, was conducted in eastern Poland, and they put some evaluation groups there into the Pripyat swamps.
Yes,
and in eastern Poland, they discovered that many of these missiles broke up prematurely. It was that I got a telegram one fine day that this observation had been made, that 70% broke up prematurely, and what we planned to do about it, because the production line was going full blast already, and at that point we simply resolved, let's go in there into the target area and let's get let ourselves get shot at so that we could observe these things on the way down to see what happened and evaluate the debris.
Yeah.
And I lived there for about 2 weeks, and we got shot at a rate of about 10 a day, all with live warhead heads for that matter. So I can really say I know the V2 not only from the delivering end, but quite intimately also from the receiving end.
You know it from both ends. Which was your closest miss?
300 feet.
300 feet.
It was really.
It was
pretty close.
Close enough for anybody.
We had a joke in those days that the purpose of the exercise for these missiles was to make the target more dangerous than the launching site. Now, many mishaps, of course, happened in the launching site also, and I think the argument was never quite settled as to whether the V2 ever got to the point where the target was really more dangerous than the launching site.
Well, no, you couldn't expect this with the first one. Now, all this then ended in, as far as you are concerned, when were the first operational shots? In September
1954. 44.
September 1944.
Yes.
And then you left Peenemünde when?
In January 1945, the war situation had developed to a point where the Russian armies had already crossed the Vistula River and were in the eastern part of Pomerania. And at night we could already hear the guns, about 100 miles away or so. Yeah. And at that point, it was pretty evident that if we wanted to get out there before the Russian armies moved in, we had to move fast. We were under very conflicting orders at that time from all kinds of agencies in Germany as to what to do.
Hmm.
For example, the local authorities said, you stay here and defend the Pomeranian soil. They didn't tell us with what, because we had no arms. The munitions department in Berlin told us to move out. Other people wanted us to stay put and continue development because the Russians would be reversed very shortly. So we really could take our pick.
You could take the order that happened to fit in with your personal preference.
Well, what I did was I assembled my department heads and simply put the question to a vote. And we voted unanimously to move out before it was too late. And try to move towards the west in the direction of where the American army was moving in. Now, this was, of course, not quite easily accomplished because there was this rapidly deteriorating situation on the inner front, and all the roads were clogged with refugees and with supply vehicles for the fighting army units in the vicinity and so forth. And so we virtually bluffed our way through with flashing high priority move orders under the noses of the guards and so forth. But we finally managed to move about 5,000 people and 12,000 tons of equipment out of Peenemünde, with the heavy equipment mostly being evacuated over the waterway by means of ships to Lübeck. Now, about 2,000 tons of that equipment finally reached White Sands and was the hard core of our early V2 test program.
Oh, of that equipment, much of this still got to White Sands.
Yes, yes.
But you personally went to Bavaria.
Yes.
And
this, we're finally split up again when we arrived in central Germany, and part of us were sent down under orders to Bavaria because they didn't want us to be so close to the western front line now, but in the meantime the war ended, and finally we were captured by the American army practically 2 days after the hostilities had ended. We virtually surrendered. We came down from the hills and said, here we are, the war is over.